Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, celebrating over 70 years of service to financial advisors, their clients, and institutions worldwide. Putnam Investments, a world of investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
The new CEO of General Motors got right to it today. Fritz Henderson said this morning that bankruptcy for the car maker is now more probable than ever. And that was just on his first full day. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Cargill. Collaborate, create, succeed. This is how Cargill works with customers. Stories online at cargill.com/creates. And by the Henry Luce Foundation, seeking to increase American understanding of East and Southeast Asia.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Tuesday today, the last day of March 2009. Good to have you here. And Fritz Henderson picked a heck of a way to wrap up the first quarter. The new CEO of General Motors spent a good long while today talking to reporters. He said he's not worried about the Obama administration trying to actually run the company day to day, that he is going to close more plants and lay off more people than the company has already announced, and that even so, it might not be enough.
The objectives that are set for us are that we've set for ourselves and that the task force has are very clear in terms of what we have to get done. And what's equally clear now is that we'll either get it done out of court or we're going to get it done in court, but we're going to get the job done.
That court he was talking about, that would be bankruptcy court. The Obama administration has given him 60 days from tomorrow, so mark your calendars for May 28th. A lot of people who are actually selling GM cars have done just that. They've been on tenterhooks waiting for the other shoe to drop for months now. And Cindy Minot is one of them. She runs two GM dealerships in Concord, North Carolina. Cindy, good to have you with us.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Are you ready for this just to be over with, for there to be a plan and get cracking on this thing?
Oh, I absolutely am. There's just been so much uncertainty and doubt, both in the minds of our customers, of course, and myself, our bankers, our creditors, and really in our employees. We've spent a lot of time assuring our customers that we're going to be here, our employees that we're going to be here, they're going to have a job, and it's all going to be fine at the end of the day. Just we need to sit this one through.
But, you know, the new CEO of GM, Fritz Henderson, said this morning, and we played some clips of him up top, he said it's going to get rougher before it gets too much better.
Well, and it may well. There's going to be still some shakeout. We've made a lot of changes internally ourselves. We know we're probably going to have to do some more. And we know that among our brother car dealers, there are going to be some losses. So, yeah, I think that probably is very true.
Well, let me ask you about those losses. You have two dealerships here in Concord. Could this conceivably cost you one of them?
Well, what I would see is since we have three franchises at one and two GM franchises at the other, we could potentially consolidate those two into one dealership, which would take two rooftops, as GM's calling them, down to one.
And would that be better for you and for the larger company, too?
I think so. We've talked internally about what that would mean to us functionally, and we see that it probably would be a benefit. Now, I still need to talk to my accountant and so forth to see what tax ramifications there might be. But, yeah, functionally and in regard to our expenses, that would be very good for us.
People would probably lose their jobs, though, huh?
No, I don't think so necessarily. We've done a little bit of downsizing. Most of our folks are paid on a commission basis. They're there producing something, either sales or repair. And some of the support people that were able to be downsized, we've already done that.
Since Detroit went to Washington 6-8 months ago and first started talking about some kind of helping hand, how's business been for you?
It's been steady. We're off. I'd say we're probably at our stores off 30-35% from this time last year. But I can say that's also been the case at our Nissan dealership in a neighboring town. But it's been steady now. We can tread water at this level for a long time, I believe.
What's your take on the Obama administration's decision to get rid of Rick Wagner?
Personally, I'm disappointed because I speak for many dealers, we're big fans of Rick Wagner. He's very dealer-friendly. So personally, I'm saddened by that. I think it probably was inevitable, and I think that the general public probably to have confidence in GM again needed that to happen.
How long have you been in the car business, Cindy?
I've been in it since 85. Our store's been there since 76.
You ever seen anything like this?
No. As I tell my people, there's always a rock in the road. We've had strikes. We've had 20% interest. We've had no gas, which is worse than expensive gas. But this is a new one. This is the biggest rock we've had.
Cindy Minot runs a pair of GM dealerships in Concord, North Carolina. Cindy, thanks a lot.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
There was a hint of promise in the banking sector today. Signs that the government's plan to get private investors buying bad assets might actually be working. That, as you might remember, is the crux of the Treasury Secretary's proposal to get the financial industry back on track. Our Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale reports that at least two private equity firms are betting troubled mortgages and bad credit card debts are worth investing in.
Colony Capital is a real estate private equity firm that got its start buying shaky bank assets during the savings and loan crisis 20 years ago.
Distressed assets are really the food that gave us birth.
Colony Capital's chairman is Thomas Barrick. He says with the government guaranteeing much of the financing, it's time for private investors to take on some of the risk.
It's a moment where we need to focus on outcome, perhaps a little more than income.
And it's not just real estate assets attracting private money. Bill Bartman, who also made a fortune during the SNL collapse, is forming a private equity fund to invest in bad credit card debts.
My humble opinion is anybody above room temperature IQ should be recognizing what they're seeing in front of them. Tremendous bargains for those who have the capacity to service delinquent debt.
That means collecting payments from deadbeat borrowers or finding new uses for foreclosed properties. And with the government's help, he says investors only need a few cents return on a dollar invested to make a profit. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Companies are doing almost anything they can to move their product out the door, so they are picking up on the current economic zeitgeist. That would be a lingering fear of unemployment. Today, Ford and General Motors announced programs to help customers pay for new cars if they lose their jobs. Walgreens is offering free health care to its jobless customers. From North Carolina Public Radio, Marketplace's Janet Babin reports that in this recession, appealing to the newly out of work may be the best marketing strategy left.
It looks like capitalism has turned compassionate. Companies are tripping over themselves to give breaks to customers who lose their jobs. Walgreens Clinic patients who get laid off will now get free treatment for minor ailments. Each visit's worth about $59. The clinics operate in 16 states, and Walgreens plans to expand the program this year. Lauren Nessler is with Walgreens Health and Wellness Division.
Our hope is that we're able to ease the stress of patients and families that are suffering a job loss and loss of health insurance during these tough economic times.
And that more customers will go to Walgreens clinics when the recession's over. Marketer Davia Temin at Temin & Company says these deals from Walgreens, car companies, and other retailers could get expensive.
First of all, you have to advertise them. So you've got the same advertising costs that you would have regardless. And then on top of that, you have what it would cost to actually give the breaks that they're promising.
But the strategy could be worth it to build brand loyalty. Temin says you don't forget a friend or company that helps you out when the going gets tough. Companies better deliver, though, on their promises. Marissa Gluck at Radar Research says to work, the offers can't be mired in fine print.
Consumers in their 20s, 30s, 40s are relatively cynical. So when companies do roll out these marketing campaigns, they run the risk of not being seen as particularly authentic.
Or worse, their failed campaigns could become associated with public anger over the economy. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
It came in like a bear, but March went out like a bull on Wall Street. It has been a long, hard first quarter, though. We will have the details when we do the numbers. President Obama landed in London this evening. He's there for a big economic summit that starts Thursday. Leaders of the world's top 20 economies are going to try to figure out how to stop the global slowdown. They'll talk about stimulus packages and tighter regulations. It's not clear what actually might come out of it. But the Brits have already declared one G20 breakthrough, a crackdown on tax havens. So what does that have to do with an economic crisis? From London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard explains.
10 tax havens have apparently agreed to come clean, Switzerland, Liechtenstein, Luxembourg and Monaco among them. They say they will share information about suspected tax evaders. The deal's been more than a decade in the making, but clinching it now could be a godsend for the US and other big governments, especially now. Tax revenues are shrinking, stimulus spending has taken off. Grace Perez-Navarro of the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development.
In the midst of a crisis, it's very difficult to raise tax rates. So what can governments do? Well, all they can try and do is to make sure they collect every penny that is legally due, and this is part of that initiative.
But not everyone is impressed by the tax haven breakthrough. Stephen Platt is a lawyer who prosecutes financial crime in offshore centres. He says the US, for one, should take a closer look in its own backyard.
There are several states within the United States itself that have very, very lax controls that attract very shady business.
Nevada, Wyoming and Delaware, he says, allow the kind of secrecy in which tax evasion flourishes, the kind of secrecy the US denounces in the tax havens.
This, I think, reveals a hypocrisy.
He says in some respects Britain is just as lax as America, and he claims Britain is bragging about the tax haven breakthrough to distract attention from the regulatory failures in Britain and the US that really caused the crisis. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
States have been slapping taxes on cigarettes for years now, but tomorrow the price of a pack is going up everywhere. The federal government is raising its tax on a pack of smokes from 39 cents to more than $1.101 to be precise. And there are going to be higher taxes on other tobacco products, too. The money is going to go to the state children's health insurance program. It covers families, kids, rather, whose families can't afford it. Ashley Milne-Tite has more now on what effect the increases are going to have on the program and on smokers' pockets.
The government hopes the tax will raise almost $33 billion for kids' health insurance during the next 5 years. Genevieve Kenny is a senior fellow with the Urban Institute.
It is absolutely a funding source that can be counted on in the short run.
But maybe not in the long run. The Urban Institute says in the past, some states that levied tobacco taxes found they raised less than they expected as smokers bought their cigarettes in other states. Kenny says the federal tax is sure to have one long-term benefit.
It works by reducing the number of smokers or the number of cigarettes that are consumed.
With a recession on, some people are already kicking the habit even before the tax kicks in. Patrick Reynolds runs the Foundation for a Smoke-Free America. He says now's the perfect time to introduce an extra incentive to quit.
I believe a higher cigarette tax is going to have a greater impact in a recessionary economy because people are financially sensitive.
New Yorkers are already paying $10 a pack, so you'd think they'd be prime candidates for giving up. Not according to Donovan Peters, who was taking a smoke break outside his Midtown office building. He says cigarettes can always be had for less, so smokers still have a few options.
Indian reservations, they have those mail order cigarettes, things like that. And I know my sister, I have my best friends in Florida, so that's probably where I'm going to be getting mine from now on.
He says the recession may be biting, but he doesn't have the fortitude to give up. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
And now, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials gained 86 points today, 1.1% closed at 76.08. The NASDAQ plumped up 26 points, 1.75%, closed at 15.28. The S&P 500 put on 10 points, 1.33%, finished at 7.97. J.P. Morgan trotted up 7% today. Citigroup climbed nearly 10%. Bank of America levitated 13%. A broker upgrade lifted Microsoft stock 5%. Other tech shares followed suit. The software maker Autodesk shot up 10%. General Motors plunged 28% today. Several units of a Dutch car dealer that imports GM cars declared bankruptcy. One other thing to mention, on Friday we said Accenture reported a loss last quarter. Accenture lowered its forecast, but the consulting giant did report a profit, up a bit from a year ago. Today, Accenture fell 1.2%, and you're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Angie's List, providing first-hand consumer reviews on local services like plumbers, painters, movers, and now doctors. Details at angieslist.com. Now you can take Marketplace with you wherever you go. Tap in marketplace.org into your mobile phone for the latest business news, decoders that explain financial terms, and updates on the economic crisis.
From the Marketplace Statebook, here's a look at events coming up Wednesday, April 1st. In Washington, the Commerce Department reports on construction spending for February. In Detroit, automakers release sales figures for March. And the Senate Armed Services Committee holds a hearing on U.S. policy toward Afghanistan and Pakistan. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. A year and a half into the recession, it's reasonable to be asking, when is this thing going to end? Anybody who tells you with any degree of certainty is guessing at best. Commentator Tyler Cowen says that's because there is a whole lot else we don't know either.
Before the economy can start a rebound, investors need to know a lot more than they do right now. One reason we're not close to an economic turnaround is because we don't know where the bottom lies. Investing isn't just a yes or no decision. It's more like yes versus wait and see. So when there's lots of uncertainty, investors hold off, if only to see what will happen. Fewer jobs are created and the economy continues to decline. The problem today is that there are so many sources of major economic uncertainty, probably more than any time since the Great Depression. For instance, we don't know if America's five or six largest banks will survive, whether the stimulus will work, what Congress will do with energy policy and health care, and how we'll pay for all of the bailouts. The AIG debacle means that corporate leaders don't even know what to expect for their paychecks. The U.S. government has picked up the ill-advised habit of imposing or threatening restrictions on bailed-out firms, yet retroactively rather than transparently in advance. The uncertainty covers most of the world. Many European banks are fragile, and those banks are too big relative to their home economies to be bailed out easily. The European Central Bank does not have the same powers or mandate as does the U.S. Fed. Asia's a problem, too. China funds a big chunk of our government's debt, yet Chinese exports are stalling, real estate has slowed to a crawl, and the country has a long history of political instability in times of turmoil. What investors need is a reason to move beyond waiting, and so we must get the bad news out of the way and clarify what our government will do moving forward. You can't expect every problem to go well, but you can look for resolution. When people stop guessing at how bad things will get and all the bad news is out, that's also when they start investing. Until then, you can expect some pretty tough going.
Tyler Cowen teaches economics at George Mason University. His blog is called Marginal Revolution. You can find a link to it, and you can send us your thoughts on our website. It's marketplace.org. Nearly half of all college students in this country go to community colleges. Often their goal is to transfer to a four-year school. But in this recession, some of them are doing just the opposite, leaving four-year schools for classes at community colleges instead. Emily Hanford of American Radio Works reports now from Montgomery County, Maryland, just outside Washington, D.C.
The student center at Montgomery College was packed for the first day of classes this semester.
Good morning. Need a campus map? Need some directions? Know where you're going?
The college got so many calls from people wanting to transfer here that they whipped up new brochures explaining the process.
I don't know where the Pavilion 3 is.
Pavilion 3?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sekou Ba is looking for his English class.
Montgomery College is high school 101, basically.
Ba did not expect to be here. He started college last fall at a university in Pennsylvania. He had a federal Pell Grant plus a small scholarship. He had to borrow the rest, about $12,000 a year. It seemed reasonable. Then the economy started tanking.
When I was at school, I always watched the news like every day, and then I kept on seeing economy is going down, and then they were talking about how loans would be harder to get and how all these things would happen.
Then there was some kind of snag with his scholarship, and he got a bill he didn't expect. He had to borrow $2,000 from his sister. He started adding up all the money he was going to owe.
I got fearful, and I was like, I'd rather not risk it. I'd rather be safe.
English 101-102 is a two-semester sequence of reading, writing, development.
Ba's classes here at Montgomery College cost him nothing. His Pell Grant covers the entire tuition. And his English class has only 25 students. He had bigger classes last semester. In the crowded campus center, there are lots of students here because it's cheaper. The college doesn't know exactly how many are transfers from four-year schools like BA, but overall enrollment is up nearly 10% from this time last year.
The word is out about community colleges and the value they provide.
This is Brad Stort, the provost. His big job on the first day of classes is to stand outside the parking garage and calmly explain to his new students that it's full and they should take the bus. Later today, he'll put on a different hat and head to Annapolis for a reception with state legislators.
We'll go to play defense tonight. We'll say thank you for everything you've done. And we'll say, please don't do anything to our budget.
The state provides about 15% of their budget. The county provides even more, and no one's being spared this year. Montgomery College has already imposed a hiring freeze. There's no funding for new programs, no salary increases. More cuts are probably coming, and more students, too.
Abanola.
Thank you very much.
Abanola.
In the admissions and advising office, there's an hour-long wait. Entire families are here. The TV is tuned to CNN. 7,000 job cuts at Home Depot today, 8,000 at Sprint. Some parents are trying to come up with tuition for their children and themselves. Melissa Gregory thinks it's only the beginning. She's the financial aid director, and she's bracing for next fall when she's expecting more of what she saw at the beginning of this school year. Just days before classes began, parents coming into her office with financial aid letters from other schools.
From College Park, from American University, from GW, with wonderful financial aid packages. But they came in and said, okay, there was a lot of loan in here. We can't afford to go there. Will you honor this award letter?
These were families that had said yes to colleges, yes to financial aid packages. But at the last minute, they got cold feet.
Have a good day, and I'll see you again on Wednesday.
Sekou Ba's English class is going well. It's 2 months into the semester, and it turns out he actually likes Montgomery College. The classes are good, and they're all in the morning, so he has time to work in the afternoon. In this terrible economy, he managed to get a job at the mall. And with his tuition fully covered by his Pell Grant, he's set.
I have so much money now, extra money, I can get new stuff, anything I really want, I can get.
He's paying off his loans from last semester and saving up to buy a car. In Montgomery County, Maryland, I'm Emily Hanford for Marketplace.
Tomorrow, a small private college with a big ticket price that's worried about attracting enough students. For the 3.5 million people who've lost their jobs since the recession started, it's not just the loss of a paycheck they have to worry about. Most Americans get their health insurance through their employers, too. So when the pink slip comes, the new budget calculations a lot of people have to make include how to pay the medical bills. One Seattle doctor is helping his patients try to do that. From KUOW in Seattle, Ruby DeLuna has our story.
Dr. Michael Rosenfield is a physician with a small family practice in Seattle. About 9 months ago, he and his staff noticed that some regular patients stopped coming in. Others hadn't picked up their prescriptions, and more patients were heading to the emergency room. He remembers a parent who took her baby to the ER for an ear infection.
And I read the report carefully, and I kept thinking to myself, there's nothing here that would make me feel like it would be an emergent situation.
When Rosenfield's staff called the mom, they found out her husband had been laid off.
She felt that she wasn't going to be able to be seen because of a lost insurance.
It became clear to Rosenfield the economy was affecting his practice, so he sent out letters to his patients and introduced a new payment plan for those who lost their health insurance. They don't get billed, but they pay up front, usually between $40 to $60 for each visit, depending on their financial situation.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good.
Good to see you. Nice.
A patient named Risha has been coming to Rosenfield for more than a decade.
When I got the letter, I got this sense of relief.
Risha lost her health insurance when she was laid off 2 months ago, and she has a thyroid problem. That got her scared.
What would I do if, you know, would our entire savings be wiped out because one trip to the emergency room?
Risha wasn't the only one thinking, what if? Rosenfield was bracing to take a financial hit, but it's actually saving him money. It's reduced the amount of paperwork he has to file, and since patients pay him directly, he spends less time chasing after insurance companies for reimbursements.
Let's say they pay $50 when they're seen. That's $50 that we can deposit into our account without having to touch the account five times before getting reimbursed.
The new payment plan was also a way to make sure that patients don't skip on medical treatments. Rosenfield worries about patients with chronic illnesses like diabetes. He says they may feel fine, but they may not realize their diabetes is in fact out of control.
And they would end up with a sore on their foot and have to have an amputation. They would have renal failure. And to see that the potential for their health care to fall apart would be devastating.
And costly. The Kaiser Family Foundation estimates that as companies continue to cut jobs, as many as 6 million Americans could lose their health coverage this year. Rosenfield says the reduced fee is a small program, but it's his way of helping out.
Our job is to treat people not just for the laceration or the diabetes, but to help treat the fear. And if we can do that by telling them, you can come here, it's okay, we'll see you for an amount that's affordable, then you've treated a part of what's wrong with them.
About 150 patients have used Rosenfield's new payment plan, but some patients have told him their jobs may not be secure for long, and they might take him up on his offer of help. In Seattle, I'm Ruby DeLuna for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, offering absolute return funds with goals designed to match yours. Putnam Investments, a world of investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
These final notes, first, a reminder that not all foreclosures are residential. The tallest building in Boston was sold at a foreclosure auction in New York today. The John Hancock Tower went under the hammer for $660 million. That's about half of what it sold for just 2 years ago. And the scourge of modern telecommunications, that would be spam in your inbox, is suffering not at all from the recession. A division of Google that keeps an eye on these sorts of things reported today that after a dip the past couple of months, spam is back up to 94% of all email, 94%. And they said that the spammers are just getting smarter every single day. That is Marketplace from American Public Media this Tuesday afternoon. Today, the Dow gained 86 points, 1.1%, closed at 76.08. The NASDAQ added 26 points, 1.75%, closed at 15.28. The S&P 500 rose 10 points, 1.33%, finished at 7.97. Thanks to Jennifer Collins, Renita Jablonski, and Doug Krisner on our Morning Report crew. Coming up next time on this radio program, cash-strapped colleges can't depend on the wealthy kids anymore.
It's kind of daunting. You know, historically, you thought those families were solid and that you could count on them to pay a little bit more and fund families that were needy. You can't anymore.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.